To make it official for those who were not able to attend lecture today, exam one has been delayed even further because your instructor is running with scissors. And they always say, don't do this at home, what they do on television, but you know, I guess I just don't listen. So it's now May 4th, which is next Monday. And, you know, go ahead and sue me if you want to, Disney. May the 4th be with you. Okay, so what we're working on today is me still trying to catch up with Chapter 12, because that's where we're supposed to be, and boy, are we behind. So, very quickly, the re-summarizing where we've gotten to so far. Section 1 is all about phase changes. In last lecture, I think we finally got to identifying phase changes and talking about Hess's Law. And yes, and then we got around to that graph where I showed heat being applied at a constant pace and talking about the phase or temperature changes that were going to occur. And then I think we finally got around to water. I mentioned something about vapor pressure because that's in here. And then we got to phase diagrams and water. And I actually made it through the story of water more than I thought I was going to. But let me just remind you of where we had left off then. So this is a phase diagram for water. And And remember, traditionally, it's pressure that's on the x-axis. It is pressure on the y-axis, the one on the left, and then temperature on the x-axis. And so drawing this diagram for water, trying to replicate the way it's represented in your book, we have something that looks pretty much like this. All right? Remember, the lines represent equilibrium. So there's pressure-temperature combinations where both phases can exist at equilibrium. And for all substances, you also have this point that I've described several times now, the triple point, which is where everything is at equilibrium. And darn it, I forgot yet again. I'm going to have put a post-it note on my face to say, get you that video of the triple point of water, because it's kind of interesting to watch. So I'm going to do that on my other laptop here. Remember to send the bleeping video, triple point of water. Okay, so then what I talked about was this, the fact that if we take a vertical line through water, and maybe this is the part I didn't write down, at a fixed temperature, get rid of these other things here. Oh, that's right. You can't see the interface I'm working with. Okay. In water, at a fixed temperature, which that's what that vertical line means. If you look at the graph, it hits the t-axis, and so that means a particular temperature. So in water, at a fixed temperature, as pressure is increased, water will first change from a vapor to a solid, then a liquid. This is due to the fact that the intermolecular forces in water combine with water's shape cause molecules of water to be pulled apart meaning the solid is less dense than the liquid. When enough pressure is applied, the intermolecular forces are overcome. So water turns into a liquid. I don't think I had written it quite down. Well, if only I had this electronic device where I could, for example, do this. And let's see, what did I talk about? No, I just wrote the line down and talked about it, and I didn't ever write it down. So back to today's. There we go. Now, I think I even have addressed the supercritical fluid, but I'll say it again because I remember writing that in a set of notes. That is a type of fluid, something that flows, that doesn't have the behavior quite of a gas because it's too condensed to really be a gas, but it's not really a liquid either because a liquid will have a constant volume, but this supercritical fluid expands to occupy all the volume of the space. So that's something that only exists normally at really high temperatures and pressures. But for carbon dioxide, where is that? It's at 31 degrees Celsius. That's not very hot. And at 73 atmospheres, which turns out that's not so difficult to create. So you can have what's known as supercritical carbon dioxide, which one day when I'm not so behind, I'll talk about some more stories related to it. But I think I did talk about different phases of water. In your text, there's a sample problem that shows you different phases of carbon to show the different types of forms it exists in, because there's graphite and diamond. And of course, we hopefully know that when we put tons of pressure on carbon, that's what turns it into diamond. So now I'm going to move on to section 12.3, unless anyone's got any questions.
I have a question.
Yes.
So when you put even more pressure on carbon, does it become a liquid after?
Let me go back and look at the diagram. And I would share it with you, but I'm looking on another laptop so I can be more efficient. And it turns out it's when you go to higher temperature. Higher pressure would favor a solid because the solid is more dense. So in fact, let me add to the notes below here. In most substances...
Oh, so it all has to do with the intermolecular forces, pretty much.
Yeah.
Whatever has the molecules more closely together in a higher pressure situation or higher temperature situation or higher pressure situation is better.
Right.
Okay.
So in most substances, the solid is more dense. And what that would result in, so for something like carbon dioxide, for example, technology. It looks more like this, where you have a positive slope to that solid liquid line, which bad instructor not labeling my diagrams. Here we have solid liquid gas, solid liquid gas. And just to point it out up here, for water, it has a negative slope for that same line. Other questions? Please get your screenshots. All right, moving on. Section 12.3, types of intermolecular forces. So I have already summarized these, but I have to come back and maybe do it one last time to talk about the strengths of the forces. And let me cheat again and see what we did before, see how much really I should rewrite. Let's see. I don't think we talked about it on this day at all. Nope. And back on Friday. Ah, so here on Friday, we did summarize the different types of forces, but I need to make something more explicit because I forgot to put something on the notes there. So I will put it in today's notes. So a general statement. The greater the charges involved, the stronger the intermolecular forces. Because these intermolecular forces are nothing more than attractions between positive and negative charges. And what this section is about is what causes the different kinds of interaction. And it actually goes further than our discussion. It puts in a discussion of bonding itself, because that's an interaction of charges. But then it gets to these intermolecular interactions, these intermolecular forces. So, intermolecular forces involving ions. Are usually stronger than intermolecular forces involving permanent dipoles which in turn are usually stronger than intermolecular forces involving temporary dipoles. And even within these temporary dipoles, the book points out in a table, which is on page, page 485. And it shows that dispersion forces, London dispersion forces, the forces caused by instantaneous dipoles, they're normally the weakest of all. So then the text goes on to describe all the different types of forces that we've talked about, except for one. I have not yet come to hydrogen bonding. Because it's a strong intermolecular force, but it's not really truly a bond. So what is hydrogen bonding? Hydrogen bonding is a dipole-dipole interaction caused whenever a nitrogen-hydrogen, oxygen-hydrogen, or fluorine-hydrogen bond is present. This is due to the large electronegativity difference between the atoms. In the bonds. Oop, sorry. There we go. And hydrogen bonding shows up in a lot of places. I'm not going to draw these structures just to save a little bit of time, but just to mention examples. In DNA, if and when you get to the point that you study DNA, the different strains of DNA, or different strands, are held together just by these perfectly aligned hydrogen bonding interactions. If you've heard of your guanine, thymine, cytosine, all those in the past, you might have had to do that as an exercise at some point, draw the connections. And just to tell a small story, if any of you know Professor Muzzi, she has in her office a set of plush toys for kids that are the four bases that are in DNA, and they have little magnets in their arms or whatever they have, so that only the right pair will cling together. So if you would like to teach your 2 or 3 year olds about the DNA base pairs, you can easily do that too. Yeah, I know. There's tons of geeky things out there. If you didn't know about it, there's a whole line of jewelry, sterling silver jewelry, that's like different molecules for earrings and such. Anyways, back to the story, the real story. So I was talking about different hydrogen bonding interactions. Kevlar, the amazing strength that comes from Kevlar is just insane amount of hydrogen bonding. Proteins, the way that proteins fold the way they do, that also involves largely different types of hydrogen bonding. So this is important in lots of places in nature, but it's just a particularly polar bond. So it really belongs in the family of dipole-dipole interactions. So not to diminish what hydrogen bonding is, but hydrogen bonding. Oh, I already wrote it there. Dipole-dipole interaction. Already got that. Now let's see what else. London dispersion forces, we already got that. It even has the example of how molecular shape can affect boiling point.
Is it frozen?
It is. Thank you for the catch. Fixing it right now. Ooh. Come on, iPad. There we go. So, effect of shape on boiling point. I wanted to take the time to talk about it because it's an interesting example. So, the molecule, it writes out in somewhat explicit format. I'm going to do it more like the organic format that we've seen. It's curious. The book uses it a different way than I would. But it gives you these two different structures of pentane. The pent in that name means that it's 5 carbons. The ane in that name stays mainly in the plane. No, the ane means a saturated hydrocarbon. Okay, what does that mean? It means a compound that only has carbon and hydrogen in it. Saturated means no double or triple bonds. So these are both forms of pentane. They would have different names technically. One would be called normal pentane, and one would be called neopentane. Sean, sorry, just saw your hand there.
Sorry, Professor. I was just going to go back to the hydrogen
question. Yeah, go ahead. Actually, that's fine.
What about hydrogen particularly makes it so, like, strong of a bond? Because there are, I mean, obviously it's not like the least electronegative.
Correct.
Like, there are things like, you know, potassium, which is like super electro, like very low. Why isn't something like that more like of a stronger bond?
Talking off the seat of my pants, you would then have an ionic bond in much of those cases. So if you had a potassium connected to nitrogen, it would cause it to be an ionic bond because it would be that polarized. So
okay.
Hydrogen bond. So these are not the hydrogen bonds themselves. That's an important point to write down, and I often miss that. So good you asked that question because it made me think. These are not the hydrogen bonds.
So it's not this hydrogen more so has to do with, like, are you saying like polar covalent bonds?
So yes, they are polar covalent bonds, and let me show you what the hydrogen bond actually is. I guess I'm in such a rush to get through this chapter, I'm leaving some important details out. This is the hydrogen bond. It is the interaction of one hydrogen with another molecule.
Okay. I thought we were talking about, like, oxygen to hide, like the, you know what I mean? Like the
no, lime. No. That's why I realized that's a very, I just, somehow this phrase hydrogen bonding was such a common thing when I was a kid that I know I'm a geeky science major, but I thought it was one of those things that everybody talks about in their chemistry classes. So that's why I'm just kind of skimming through it, but obviously I'm mistaken in that belief. So, no, the bond between nitrogen and hydrogen is polar covalent, and the reason we don't have any other terms for other types of situations is, like I said, if you started getting even less electronegative than hydrogen, then you'd start having ionic bonds.
Okay.
And then that would be a different type of interaction. This hydrogen bond is the one that occurs, for example, between two molecules of water. And maybe because the question has come up, again, I thought this was one of those, like, everybody knows type of things, and I'm just trying to find the right picture. But I often forget, you know, and it's kind of embarrassing.
Maybe everybody does.
Well, it's kind of embarrassing. Like, my own mother was talking to a good friend of mine once, and, you know, David, well, he is different. And yeah, most people that hear that just start bust out laughing. The only one that tops that is a few years ago, where I'd gotten a bit out of shape because life was kind of getting at me. And I will never forget, one of my students said, "Dr. Gray, you know, you really take it easy on those donuts, or one of these days you're going to start erasing that board with your stomach."
Jesus.
The student managed to get an A anyways, but just in case some of you out there, yeah, savage. I like your adjectives.
Did he bring you donuts to class? I'm just kidding.
No, I mean, yeah, he passed, but wow, you know. Anyways, here is a picture of a section of DNA. So what does DNA stand for? Deoxyribonucleic acid, which is a fancy word for this really, really, really long molecule. And as you can see, that says phosphate deoxyribose. Ribose is a sugar. That shows up in RNA. Deoxyribose means take one of the oxygens out of it. It's still kind of a modified sugar then. Phosphate, like phosphoric acid. So phosphate, sugar. Off of each of the sugars is a nitrogen. And that contains a nitrogenous base, one of these four that you have here. And what you see are these dotted lines in between. All of these molecules have such perfect bond lengths in the molecules themselves that those hydrogen bonding interactions only can occur between those two different sets of molecules, which, no matter what your philosophy of life and existence, all that is, it's kind of scary that all the information that makes us is somehow encoded in that you're looking at right there. And that's hydrogen bonding holding that together.
Nice. Okay, thank you.
All right. Back to the iPad. Okay, so here's what I was going to try to say, and I'm just going to copy what's in the book, that if you get the rough shape of these molecules, this one's got a longer shape to it, so it's got more surface area. More surface area means more chances for these little pluses and minuses to interact. Here we've got the same number of atoms, but it's got less surface area. And that's related to the fact that the boiling point of what's called normal pentane over here, not its blood pressure, 36.1 degrees Celsius, where this other one is 9.5 degrees Celsius. So more surface area, just in case you don't catch the connection, more dispersion forces. Okay. Now take your screenshots while I flip through the rest of this section to make sure there's nothing else that I'm missing out on. No, that's it on that section. So finally, we get to the next section, 12.4, which is properties of the liquid state. Oh, gosh, that's right. As embarrassing as this is, we're going to skip over that just for the moment to get to water, which we already dealt with that too, didn't we? Okay, I guess we got the time to talk about these things really quickly. So let me just define a couple of very fundamental terms. There's something known as surface tension, which one of the best examples of it, and if you know, if only I had this device that I could look these pictures up with, surface tension insect. And yeah, you just type in the word surface tension insect, and the picture you're about to see is the type of thing that shows up. So I am looking at a picture of an insect that is somehow magically floating on the surface of the water. And you can see there are actually little indentations in the water. Well, what's going on? Hydrogen bonding. That the hydrogen bonding interactions of water are strong enough, and in this case, the force is distributed over a wide enough area, so there's low enough pressure being applied by this lightweight insect that set of intermolecular forces of water is able to repel the insect. It keeps its form together, and that ability is what's known as surface tension. So now that I've shown you that video, let me write that in text form. Surface tension is, what is it? What's the book's formal definition? I don't like that definition, though. Surface tension is the ability of a liquid
iPad.
Oh, darn it. Thank you. I never did that. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Ah. See the running with scissors part. There we go.
Bruh.
Oops. There we go. The ability of a liquid to resist an object breaking through its surface. Caused by intermolecular forces between molecules at the surface. And this I mentioned because it's on this section of 12.4, I think it is. Yes, which is properties of the liquid state. The other one I'll mention for now is viscosity. And that is not just its density, it is the resistance of a liquid or a fluid to flow. And I'm going to say, think honey. Honey, if you were to just take it out on a ladle or something and let it drip, it might eventually drip after a long, long, long time. Why does it take so long? Because sugars, if only I had this picture of sugars I could show you on the internet, you know? Oh, great internet, show me sucrose. Show me its formula. Show me the money. All right, hold on. Navigating there. Oh, there we go. And here it comes your way. So there's a structure of sucrose, which this is a partial line structure. So the bits on the diagram where there are atoms missing, those are carbons. So these are two carbon cycles that have oxygens all over the place. And you see that there are all these OH groups all over the place. Those are not yes, they are alcohols. They are not hydroxides. They are alcohol groups. So sugars have all of these alcohol groups that can hydrogen bond extensively with each other and with water. So you've got all these intermolecular forces holding the molecules together. That's why something like honey, it's not just as dense, it's hard to stir even. Mercury is dense, but it's easy to pour. So mercury doesn't have as the same kind of viscosity as something like honey might, even though their densities are very different. There, that was a good example. Now, iPad. So I said that viscosity is the resistance of a fluid to flowing. I said, think honey. Honey, and so I won't, in fact, I'll expand on that. Don't think honey, eat it. Honey, for example, does not flow easily. Due to the extensive intermolecular forces between alcohols in the sugar molecules. Now, let me see if I can find, before I make this statement, because when I make these statements without looking up the internet, I end up being wrong. Oh, great internet, what is the viscosity One second, my computer is now acting odd. Viscosity of honey is a unit I'm not familiar with, but it's 10,000. Now what's the viscosity of mercury? Way less. Oh, yes. And I'm sorry this is taking a moment, but I've never looked these numbers up before, and it's just kind of interesting. Blood is thicker than mercury, even, for example. So I was comfortable in making that statement. And sorry, you can't see what I'm trying to look at. So where are you at now, actually? You're still seeing the iPad, which, yes, is updating. Yay. So honey, for example, does not flow easily due to the extensive intermolecular forces. Mercury, on the other hand, is much denser. But flows more easily. And one of these days, we're going to have a discussion of metallic bonding. Which, I'm not talking about that anywhere in here, because that'll just fry our brains if we tried that. So, at least we got to the properties of liquids. Then we got to some of the uniqueness of water. One of the things that's odd about water, besides its really high surface tension, think of insects floating on it, it's also got a very high heat capacity. So let me put that into the notes here. Water, since water has very high intermolecular forces, it has a high surface tension. And an exceptionally high specific heat. Which is why it's used in cooling systems, because it can take on a lot of heat. Now, allow me one more moment. Ah, that's what I thought. The last thing that we're supposed to talk about is solids. We will eventually talk about solids, but we're probably going to move on. Just to make sure we get to some of the really important parts of the quarter, because I think we're already a couple of days behind now if I had the bravery to look at the syllabus. So, except for one last topic, we have finished all the material that is going to end up on the exam, and I will squint and hide my eyes as I do look at the syllabus here. Oh, actually, we're not so bad. We didn't get to solids today, but we're not nearly as behind as I thought we were. Oh, thank goodness. I guess I managed to catch up somehow. But anything I say past this point, with the exception of one topic, is not on the exam. And that's only because I didn't want to say it before the quiz, because I didn't want to confuse everyone. Now, I know we're about out of time here, so I'll just tell you this will be the first thing that we start up with on Friday. If you missed the beginning of class, the exam has now been pushed to Monday because I've been behind and thought I was more behind than I am. But that's okay. I'm still going to leave it for Monday. And so the last thing we need to talk about is the real gas law. We talked about the ideal gas law. We just never got around to the real one. So, are there any questions before we end lecture today?
Wait, so the test on Mondays going to include the real gas law and stuff?
Yes, because it was supposed to already. It's not something I'm sneaking in. It's just because this is one of the reasons I'm delaying, to make sure we have the time to talk about everything.
Okay.